So what actually happens when you pay an AI the exact same flat fee you always have, but suddenly like entirely behind your back? It decides to spend three times as much effort double-checking its own work before it even gives you an answer.
I mean, it completely changes the output. It's wild.
It really is. Well, welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is unpacking Silv's AI Weekly.
Which is always a great read.
Oh, absolutely. It's that Thursday roundup of what Matt Silverman has been reading on X this past week.
Yep.
We're distilling the absolute best signal from, I think, about 150 liked tweets.
Yeah, right around there.
And we are skipping all the corporate marketing fluff, ignoring the noise, and just splitting the real news into two buckets: AI for everyone and AI for developers.
And looking through Matt's curation this week, there is this massive, I mean, truly underlying shift in what artificial intelligence actually is right now.
Like, we are rapidly moving past the era of the AI just being a chatty pair programmer confined to a browser tab.
Yeah.
What we are seeing in these sources is AI graduating into an autonomous economic actor.
An autonomous economic actor. I love that phrasing because it just perfectly captures the gravity of what's changing for you, the listener. We aren't just typing prompts and getting text back anymore.
Not at all.
And the most glaring example of this shift, the one everyone was freaking out about, is the launch of Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7.
Oh, the pricing dynamic on this is just wild.
It's nuts because the cost is exactly the same as before. It's $5 per million input tokens and $25 per million output tokens.
Right. The sticker price didn't change.
Exactly. But the model is physically spending those tokens in a completely different way now.
Yeah, the token economics here really reveal a structural change in how the model operates behind the scenes, because Opus 4.7 is now burning like 1.0 to 1.35 times more input tokens on the exact same workload compared to the older version.
So it's just eating more tokens. Right. But it isn't just generating an answer right away. It is taking those extra tokens and using them to, well, to think.
Just literally reasoning in the background.
Exactly. The model is actively double-checking its own work. It's reasoning through edge cases, verifying its logic internally, before it ever prints a single word to your screen. And Anthropic actually had to raise the rate limits across the board for all subscribers just to compensate for this higher background token burn.
The way I've been visualizing this, and tell me if this tracks, it's like having a lawyer on a flat monthly retainer, right?
Okay, yeah.
So the retainer fee, your price, it didn't go up. But suddenly, your lawyer is spending like three times as many hours in the law library reading obscure case law and debating precedent with themselves before they finally hand you the legal brief.
That's a perfect analogy.
The output you get is just so much more rigorous, which it makes me wonder if the model is spending all this hidden effort checking its own work. Are we finally moving past the era where we have to babysit these tools for hallucinations?
I mean, that is the crucial transition here. We are moving from a paradigm of supervision to a paradigm of delegation.
Delegation.
Right. In the sources, there's this really great piece of advice highlighted from Kat Wu. She suggests that we need to fundamentally change our relationship with these models. You have to stop treating Claude like a junior developer where you review every single line of code they write.
Where you're just micromanaging everything.
Exactly. You stop micromanaging, you start treating it like a senior engineer. You hand over a massive, ambiguous project, give them the end goal, and you just trust them to figure out the intermediate steps.
And it isn't just reasoning in the dark either. It's actually seeing the work better. Opus 4.7 got a massive vision upgrade.
Oh, the resolution bump is huge.
Yeah, it now accepts images up to 2,576 pixels on the long edge. That is triple the prior resolution. And that specific number is huge for a very practical reason for you guys
Yeah,
listening.
it's not just a random flex.
No. Suddenly, you can hand it a really complex UI screenshot on a giant monitor, or like an intricate architectural diagram, or a super dense presentation slide, and it can actually read the fine text without everything turning into a blurry, pixelated mess.
Right. And for the developers tuning in, this upgrade is immediately actionable right now inside a tool called Claude Code.
Oh, yeah, the new effort levels.
Yeah, Anthropic introduced a new effort level in the settings called High. So it sits
Whoa.
right between High and Max.
Okay.
It basically allows you as a developer to explicitly tell the model, look, I don't care if this takes an extra 30 seconds. I want you to reason
Just
deeply.
take your time and get it right.
Exactly. And for their Max tier users, there is now this auto mode.
Which is terrifying and awesome.
It is. There are no more permission prompts asking if it can run a script. You give it a task, You walk away to get coffee, and you come back to verified completed work. It is an agentic workflow by default.
I mean, I have to bring up the leak, though. Because alongside the official Opus 4.7 launch, the timeline went absolutely crazy over something hiding in plain sight.
Oh, the chart.
Yeah. On the rightmost column of Anthropic's own launch chart, there was this unverified, highly speculative data column labeled Mythos Preview.
Right, and we need to be incredibly clear with you, the listener, that this is based entirely on speculative interpretations of a leaked chart.
Yes, heavy grain of salt here.
Exactly. Anthropic has not officially announced a product called Mythos. But, and this is a big, but the numbers the community is dissecting are staggering.
They're insane.
It allegedly beats Opus 4.7 by 13 points on the SWB Pro Coding benchmark, which, for context, measures how well an AI can solve real-world GitHub issues.
13 points is a massive leap.
Huge. And it beats it by 10 points on Humanity's last exam.
Which is literally a benchmark specifically designed to be so hard that AI models fail it.
Right. It's designed to break them.
There's also a claim circulating that Mythos is the first model to beat the UK AI Security Institute's cyber range entirely end-to-end.
Which is a big deal, if true.
If true, exactly. Again, we are strictly reporting on what the community found in these sources. None of this is officially released or verified. But, you know, if Opus 4.7 is the brain you delegate to, Mythos implies that this autonomous brain is about to get terrifyingly capable.
But here's the thing. A brain, no matter how capable or how deeply it reasons, is completely useless if it just sits in a jar.
Right. It can't do anything.
Right. If Opus 4.7 is the brain you delegate to, how does it actually execute long-running tasks in the real world? It needs hands. It needs a physical environment to live in. And that explains the massive explosion of developer tools we saw this week that are entirely designed to give these models agency.
So, okay, if we're giving the brain hands, I definitely want to talk about OpenAI's Codex update. Because Codex is really graduating from just being a coding assistant that spits out text in a window to being a full-blown platform.
Yes. The macOS integration is a really big deal.
They rolled out a computer use feature natively on macOS, meaning this isn't just an AI making an API call behind the scenes to some invisible web service. It can natively click buttons, move your physical mouse cursor across the screen, and type text in literally any application running on your Mac.
And the mechanism of how that works is the real game changer here. By operating at the operating system level rather than the application level, it completely bypasses the need for every software company on Earth to build a custom API integration.
Right, because APIs are a nightmare to maintain anyway.
Exactly. If a human can physically click a button on the screen, Codex can click it. And they baked in GPNEDIS 1.5 directly into it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Codex can actually look at an interface, generate UI mockups, and build front-end designs without ever bouncing you out to a third-party tool.
I think the wildest feature in that update, though, is the thread automations.
Oh, yeah. The sleep function.
Right. Codex can now put itself to sleep, wait for a really long running background process to finish compiling, and literally wake itself up an hour later to re-engage with the task without you ever touching the keyboard.
It's crazy. And, you know, if OpenAI is giving the AI hands to control your local machine, Cloudflare is basically building the entire digital city for these agents to live in.
Agent stack.
Yeah. Cloudflare just dropped a massive dump of infrastructure updates during their agents week. They're providing the underlying plumbing for autonomous systems to exist at a massive scale.
I looked at this stack from Cloudflare, and honestly, it felt like reading the building codes for a sci-fi city.
It really does.
For the developers listening, let's just break down what they actually released. First, the Cloudflare email service. Agents can now natively send and receive emails using a simple on-email hook.
Which is huge for outward communication.
Huge. Then there's Cloudflare Mesh and sandboxes. They are giving agents persistent compute environments with real PTY terminals, completely protected by post-quantum encrypted networking. And their dashboard now has generative UI, so you can literally just type create a worker and bind an R2 bucket, and it just executes the whole setup for you.
Okay, so those terms represent a massive architectural shift, so let's translate how this actually functions for everyone.
Yeah, please do.
Normally, if you write an AI agent, it lives in a script on your laptop. If you close your laptop, the script stops and the agent essentially dies.
Right. It's tied to your hardware.
Right. But Cloudflare is offering a serverless sandbox, which is essentially a 247 digital hotel room in the cloud. The agent lives there permanently. The PTY terminal just means the agent has its own native command line to run code, just like a human developer would.
Okay, that makes sense.
And post-quantum encryption just means the data it sends back and forth is secured by cryptographic locks, so incredibly complex that even future quantum computers couldn't break them.
Hold on, I need to pause you there, though, because create a worker and bind an R2 bucket still sounds like a completely foreign language to anyone not managing cloud infrastructure. What are we actually asking the AI to do in that example?
Good point. So a worker is just a tiny piece of code that runs on demand in the cloud. And an R2 bucket is just cloud storage, like a digital hard drive.
Okay, so code and a hard drive.
Exactly. Previously, a human had to click through like a dozen menus to connect those two things. Now you just tell the dashboard what you want in plain English, and the AI provisions the server and connects the hard drive automatically.
See, I'm totally on board with the convenience of that, but I really have to push back hard on the security implications of this whole setup.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
I mean, listening to this, we are giving autonomous agents persistent terminals that never sleep, the ability to wake themselves up, and their own dedicated email addresses to communicate with the outside world. Aren't we just speedrunning the creation of autonomous shadow IT departments?
That's a very real concern.
Let's say an AI agent uses its new email address to negotiate a vendor contract, makes a terrible deal, and then spins up a server to host that terrible software while I'm asleep. Who is legally responsible when the bill comes due?
You are hitting on the exact security tension the entire industry is wrestling with right now. I mean, the defense against that shadow IT nightmare is supposed to be baked into the architecture itself.
How so?
Well, Cloudflare sandboxes utilize what are called dynamic egress policies.
Egress policies. Okay.
Yeah. Think of it like a digital bouncer standing at the door of the agent's hotel room. You don't give the agent the keys to the entire internet. The bouncer only lets the agent communicate with explicitly approved websites and API endpoints.
Ah, so it's heavily restricted by default.
Right. But your point is entirely valid. The governance and auditing of these systems, like figuring out who authorized the AI to send a specific email, is going to be incredibly complex.
And Anthropic is clearly seeing this exact same future because they just introduced Claude code routines. You can set up a trigger, like a time-based cron schedule, or say a new pull request opening on GitHub, and it kicks off an automated triage or code review routine running entirely on Anthropic's cloud.
Without you doing anything.
Right. Your laptop doesn't even need to be open. The AI is just working in the background, reviewing your team's code at 3 a.m.
It's amazing. We are truly shifting from synchronous AI, where you just sit there chatting back and forth, to asynchronous AI.
Yeah.
Where the system just reacts to events in your environment without you present.
Yeah.
But what makes this week truly revolutionary is that you don't actually need a massive enterprise cloud architecture to experience this shift. This immense power is being rapidly democratized all the way down to consumer hardware.
Yes, let's zoom out from the enterprise cloud for a second and talk about running this stuff on your own laptop without spending a single dime on API credit.
Open source stuff.
Exactly. Alibaba just open sourced a new model called Qwen 3.635BA3B, and it's under an Apache 2.0 license. The magic behind it is this concept called sparse Mo, or mixture of experts. It's a 35 billion parameter model, but it only uses 3 billion parameters actively at any one time.
And to understand the mechanism of sparse Mo, you just have to think about how your own brain works.
Okay.
When you are trying to solve a really complex calculus equation, you aren't actively firing the neurons that process, like the smell of fresh coffee, right?
Right. Hopefully not.
Exactly. A mixture of experts model works the exact same way. It possesses 35 billion parameters of total knowledge, but for any specific prompt you give it, a routing network acts like a traffic cop. It activates only the highly specialized 3 billion parameters, the experts that are needed to solve that exact problem.
And the reason the developer community is completely freaking out about this is the hardware requirement.
Because it's so low.
Right, because it only activates 3 billion parameters at a time. You can use an unsloth 4-bit GGUF quantization to run it. Wait, okay, for the non-developers listening, and honestly, for me too, quantization sounds like quantum physics. What is that physically doing to the file?
Oh, it's essentially just a radical compression technique.
Okay.
Imagine taking a massive, totally uncompressed raw photograph from a high-end camera and shrinking it down into a highly efficient JPEG.
Got it.
Quantization takes the incredibly complex numbers inside the AI's neural network and basically rounds them down to take up less memory space. It shrinks the physical file size dramatically without making the AI noticeably less intelligent.
That makes total sense. And because of that compression, this massive frontier-level coding model runs locally on just 23 gigabytes of RAM.
Which is nothing these days.
It's nothing. If you have a decent gaming laptop or an M-series Mac with 32 gigabytes of unified memory, you can host this thing yourself. Yeah. You can literally be on an airplane with zero Wi-Fi, writing code with an AI assistant that is entirely private and costs absolutely nothing per token to run.
That is the literal definition of AI escaping the cloud.
Mm.
But, you know, we are also seeing AI rapidly escape the confines of the browser tab.
Oh, definitely.
For everyone who doesn't write code, the way you interact with AI is fundamentally changing this week, too. Google just dropped a native Swift Gemini app for the Mac.
Yeah, that was a huge surprise.
And Sundar Pichai mentioned that a small team prototyped it in just a few days, and they shipped over 100 features in under 100 days. It lives directly on your desktop now, completely integrated into your workflow.
And Perplexity is attacking the exact same space. They released a personal computer Mac app for their Mac subscribers that actually orchestrates your local files.
Oh, and the finance integration.
Yes. They also launched a personal finance integration linking directly to Plaid. So you can now ask the AI highly specific questions about your real-time spending habits, and it parses your actual bank data directly. The browser was really just a temporary, awkward vessel for these models. The operating system was always their actual destination.
It really was. And as these models integrate deeper into our native environments, the way we communicate with them is becoming so much more human. Look at Google's update to their Gemini 3.1 Flash text-to-speech model. They introduced a feature called audio tags.
The audio tags are fascinating. You can literally type a tag like bracket whispered bracket or bracket excited bracket directly in line with your text prompt, and the voice model instantly acts on it.
It just reads the tag and changes its voice.
It changes the dynamic entirely. Instead of acting like an audio engineer, you know, meticulously tweaking pitch and frequency dials on a synthesizer.
Sounds just exhausting.
Yeah, it feels like you are a film director giving notes to a human actor. You say, give me this line, but make it sarcastic. And the model automatically translates that human intent into the complex acoustic parameters.
It is semantic direction rather than technical tuning. The interface is adapting to us rather than forcing us to adapt to it.
Well, if we are handing over the keys to our bank accounts via Plaid and trusting these autonomous agents to execute entire jobs for us on our local operating systems, their underlying reasoning, like their core logic, has to be absolutely flawless.
That has to be bulletproof.
Which is why I think the timeline completely caught fire this week over a very specific rumor regarding AI reasoning capability.
The math rumor.
Yeah. There was this massive, completely unverified claim that an AI model called GPT 5.4 Pro solved Erda's problem number 1196. That is a 60-year-old math conjecture about primitive sets, and the rumor claimed the AI solved it in about 80 minutes of one-shot reasoning.
Now, this requires very, very careful clarification, because the way this spread is a textbook example of internet telephone.
Oh, completely.
The rumor gained incredible traction because Jared Duker-Lichtman, who was an expert mathematician, tweeted about primitive sets on the exact same day the rumor started.
Right. People saw his tweet and immediately jumped to the conclusion like, oh, the math expert is confirming the AI's proof. The AI just solved a 60-year-old math problem.
But it was a total coincidence.
Yes. We want to be incredibly clear with you. He was tweeting about his own past doctoral work on the subject. He was not independently confirming the AI's output whatsoever.
Not at all.
The idea of an AI solving a multi-decade mathematical mystery autonomously is, you know, a fascinating concept. But until a human mathematician sits down, rigorously reviews the proof, and officially verifies it, you should treat this entire story as highly speculative misinformation. We are not endorsing the claim. We are just breaking down how the rumor evolved and the sources.
It really serves as a critical reminder. As these models become increasingly capable of generating highly sophisticated, authoritative-sounding outputs, our human verification processes have to become equally robust. We are delegating authority, but we cannot delegate the final verification. Trust, but rigorously verify.
Trust, but verify is the perfect rule for this new era. Okay, let's bring this all home. What should you actually do with all this information this weekend?
Lots to do.
For the developers tuning in, go into Claude Code and try Opus 4.7 on that new X-High effort level. Take a massive task that you would normally break down into 10 tiny pieces, hand the whole thing over, and see how it delegates the intermediate steps. Or, you know, if you have the RAM, download Qwen 3.6 and run a Frontier model locally on your machine.
And for everyone else, the tools are sitting right there waiting for you. Install the native Gemini Mac app to see what AI feels like outside the browser window. If you are a Perplexity user, try linking the new Plaid integration to get a deeply personalized AI-driven view of your own finances. The barrier to entry to experience this autonomous shift has literally never been lower.
So what does this all mean when we zoom out? The defining quote of the week from the sources comes from a thesis published by Sequoia Capital.
That thesis distills this entire paradigm shift into a single sentence. If you build a copilot, a tool that merely helps a human do a job, you are in a brutal race to the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
You're constantly competing with every new foundational model released by Anthropic, OpenAI, or Google. But if you sell the completed outcome, the finished file tax return, the reviewed and highlighted legal contract, the fully debugged software feature, you capture the actual economic value. You aren't selling the hammer. You are selling the finished house.
Which brings me back to our opening thought. We are officially moving past the era of paying the AI a flat fee to just chat with us. We are trusting it to think, to verify, and to act.
Right.
But let's take it one step further. As these AI agents gain the ability to email clients natively, wake themselves up to finish a task, manage their own cloud infrastructure on Cloudflare, and execute full work outcomes completely independently.
Where does it end?
Exactly. How long until we see the very first fully automated company? I'm talking about a corporation composed entirely of interacting agents where the human isn't an employee or even a manager. The human is simply the legal owner and the consumer of the profits.
It's coming.
Think about your own day-to-day. What does your specific job look like when you no longer have your hands on the keyboard and you shift from being a creator of inputs to an editor of outcomes?